Ben Helfgott, Reel 11.
Yes, well, I had a strange premonition, a foreboding that that's it. And so I cried for 2 days, because that was how long we were traveling from Buchenwald to a place called Schlieben. We arrived in Schlieben in the early morning. We've learned that this was a camp that was only set up about 8-10 months earlier, there were factories where the Germans were producing the latest invention of anti-tank weapons. They called them Panzerfausten. They were the sort of forerunners of the present-day anti-tank weapons, the ones that you carry on your shoulders, and you from a distance of 100 meters, you can knock out a tank. That was very fortunate that it came as late as that, because if they would have invented these earlier during the war, God knows what would have happened. Because they were at 100 meters and then in 200 meters they were really fatal to the tanks. And this was one of the first factories that they started, and they were producing them very, very fast. The people who were working there already were those who were working, most of them were Jews, worked in Poland in Skarżysko. It was there were large munition works there, the camp where I related earlier about where my 2 aunts were sent there. Now they evacuated that place, and many from that factory were sent to work here in Schlieben. Now, again, we traveled for 2 days, and we didn't receive any food at all. And of course, when we arrived, we were very hungry. And you've got to understand, now the situation was a little bit different, because when we traveled from my hometown to Buchenwald and we didn't have anything to eat, I didn't have anything to eat for 7 days, in the main we were in reasonably good condition when we started off, but the condition was slowly deteriorating in Buchenwald. And so now it was, one started off a little bit hungry, and then on top of it, for 2 days not having any food, the hunger was that much more aggravated and pronounced. So when we came, the first thing we were asking for, before we even asked anything, was, when are we going to get some food? And we were told, well, be patient, you will get your food sometime later on. We got the food at about 6 o'clock. They brought cauldrons of soup. And when the soup was dished out to us, the stench of that food was such that we thought that we were given not food, but we were given excreta. It was so foul that in spite of our hunger, we simply couldn't consume it. The reason why it had such a stench was because it was made from rotten potatoes without any salt, because there was a shortage of salt at the time. But there were the potatoes were all meshed. So there were no potatoes. It was just water, but stinking, rotten water. Without any taste, without anything. Now, at that time, around that time, the people were coming in from work, heard that a group has arrived from Buchenwald. And of course, everybody was always keen to find out who has arrived. Maybe there's some relative, maybe there's somebody, some some acquaintance, and they came to see us, and suddenly they saw that we are not eating our soup. So the word went around quickly in camp that this new group has arrived and they're not eating food. And we saw swarms of them coming at us, going straight to the cauldrons. And then they were all fighting for it. And one moment, one of the cauldrons was turned over. And the next thing we saw were people lying on the floor, a dirty floor, licking this food. And when we looked at their clothing was in tatters. And lice were just swarming over them. And their faces were so emaciated that we looked at ghosts. And we kept looking at ourselves and we thought, where did we come to? Is it real? We just couldn't believe because we've never seen anything like it. It was so traumatic. A shock just made us feel numb. We just couldn't say anything. Well, and everybody, and those people who sort of, they looked at us, they guessed what we were thinking. And they looked at us and they said, you wait, in a few days' time, you will be doing exactly the same what we are doing. And we just couldn't believe it, that it is possible for human beings to turn to that kind of degradation and condition. Well, there were some people in that camp who were actually from our hometown, because they were sent earlier, in 1943, some of them were sent to the Skarżysko, and from Skarżysko in 1944, in August or July, they were evacuated when the Russians were coming, were approaching, and they were evacuated to Buchenwald, and they were the ones who built that camp. It was in a way, for them, it was they felt a little bit relieved that suddenly they see their people from their compatriots from their hometown. But we were absolutely shaken to the core. The following day, we were ordered out at about 4:30 in the morning. We were given for breakfast, at 4:30, we were given ersatz coffee, which was really very cold. Again, was really dishwater. And then we were outside, allocated to go to work.
Had you been allowed to keep on the clothes that you already had when you arrived there?
Yes. Oh, yes. I mean, that was... Now, I was very lucky then, because they said that that boys will go to work in a special place, Jugendliche, juveniles. And I would say, in a way, that was a great salvation, because I went to work in a place where there were German women, and the German women insisted that we must be clean, because they weren't going to be infected by us, because their job was to control the Sinders, to make sure that they're all packed and that they are perfect. And our job was to put in these cinders in a box. And they simply were doing the control. So we were sitting on a bench. So the saving thing about it was that, first of all, we could sit whilst we were working. And secondly, that because we were working inside, and this was winter now, the women, and the women insisted, of course, German local from the local town, It was warm there. That was a great relief, because the rest of the men, they were sent to work outside, and that was a killer. And even in the factories, they had to carry heavy boxes. And others were sent to another place, which was as equally as dangerous, because they were working with poison in order to put in the poison inside. And was very dangerous. It affected the lungs. And because they were working in this place, they were getting an extra special soup for sort of which made it easier for their lungs. They were giving them that. And some people volunteered to go to work for that extra soup.
What were they working with poison for?
It was a poisonous when you had to load up the cinders inside, the explosive was a poisonous powder. Within a matter of 2 days, 3 days, whilst we were being there in the place, we got used to eating that lovely soup that I described before. And the only thing that we were saying to ourselves was, weren't we foolish to have let that go? And for a week, we never stopped thinking of anything else, because how could we have let that soup go? If that soup contained 100 calories, that was a lot, because there was nothing in there. But this was our main food, because all we received was a plate of the soup, was a tin plate, during the day at 12 o'clock, and in the evening we received a piece of bread. But this bread was again also foul bread. It was heavy and soaked in water to make it heavier. We're supposed to have been half a quarter of a pound, but I would say if it was it was a lot less than that, but I said it was soaked in to make it heavier, soaked in water. Again, it was tasteless, and when we received it in the evening, it took us no more than 2 minutes to eat it, and that was all that we had. Now, within a matter of 2-3 weeks, people from our group were beginning to fall away. As we were walking to work or were coming back from work, on the roads they were just falling off. And we didn't have the strength even to pick anybody up.
What would the guards do to those who fell by the way?
They just would pick them up and take them away, and that would be that.
They wouldn't shoot them there and then?
No, not in that camp. They didn't shoot. Now, there was another thing. You see, one of the German officers, he was an older man. He must have fought in the First World War. He had a mania. The mania was that in the early morning, when we got up at 5 o'clock, before we went out to camp, to work from the camp, he made us go up and down and up and down, and he used to teach us songs, German songs. And we used to sing songs as we were going up and down. He says, Lauter!
Marching
and singing German songs. I remember them even now. So, the idea was that we stayed outside as long as we could. And it was a very cold winter. I mean, December was very, very cold. Well, we were all very, very depressed. We were really beginning to wonder whether we'll ever get out of it.
Could you tell me something about the sleeping arrangements and the blocks that you
had? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, we were... it's also I was in a hut, in a small it was all a large hut, large huts, and I had one sort of large room where there were 50 boys. There were bunks 2 foot wide, one on top of another. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, and the fourth one, the top one, was very near the ceiling. Now, there was an additional curse, and that was the huts were full of bugs. And those people who were at the top, where the bugs were falling down the top, and during the night, they were eating us up. Our skins became raw. They were like a map because the bugs were just absolutely killing us. After a month, when we looked at each other, we didn't recognize each other. We were old bones. And some people were beginning to turn, their bodies were beginning to be swollen. They looked fat. And after a time, their eyes were disappearing, their face were getting bigger, all sort of yellowish, their legs were getting big, and after a time they just collapsed. Because once swelling started, that was it. And those who got that swelling very early, of course, they had no chance at all.
What was this due to?
Pump.
What was the swelling due to?
Swelling is due to hunger. And this is how... This
malnutrition.
Is malnutrition, hunger, malnutrition. Some of the boys were developing all kinds of wounds, open wounds, and yellow puff was coming out. They were pushing it out. It was, and we were all living together, one on top of one another. And, you know... It was really very, very frightening. You get used to it, but every time you start thinking about it, you go mad. But the hunger was of such extreme intensity that it took all our thinking. We couldn't think of anything else. All we would do is dream about food. I was dreaming that if I ever survive, I would, in order to remember this, I would every Friday evening sit down at the table and eat a loaf of bread. That was my dream at the time. You can imagine. Just this alone, that was my greatest dream, that I will eat a loaf of bread, and that was what was all I wanted. Needless to say, I never kept to it, but I've never forgotten it. I often think about it, and I always find when I see bread left around, it's not eaten, I find it, I get very upset. I find it a great sin. I said, my God, how can this be left here? If I had this bread, what this would have done to me? Whenever I see bread wasted, I am immediately reminded of what was happening to me. So that, and since this happens quite a lot when I go out, whether it's restaurants, whether it is at home, or whether it is at friends, or whether it is at a party, it is one of the first things that comes to my mind. It's something that I cannot get out of mind. I don't think, I've said it again and again, I don't think anybody can really understand the meaning of hunger unless one has gone through it. Those people ask, how is it possible to go on a hunger strike? And if people go on a hunger strike and they can do it, I mean, hunger is nothing. I don't think people really understand what it means. If you go on a hunger strike, your will makes you do it. You have a purpose. The purpose is to do something. The hunger is immaterial. You also lie on your bed. You don't do anything. You don't move. But in our case, we were subjected, in addition to the hunger, we were subjected to everything, every possible curse a human being can be subjected to. Hard work, degradation, flogging, cold. We had no change of clothing. For the whole duration when we were in that camp, no change of a shirt, no change of pants, no change of socks.
There was no means of cleaning your clothes at all.
It needed willpower in the cold to get out to the washroom, and there was cold water, to wash your shirt, and then find a place, some place to dry it. After a time, our socks disappeared, our shoes were full of holes, and we were walking deep in snow. We were walking in almost barefoot with sub-zero temperature.
Approximately how long would you have to walk to work?
About half an hour, 3/4 of an hour. Now, the conditions under which we lived there, well, whatever I describe it to you, I don't give it justice. Now, for some reason or other, my willpower really at that stage became something that was superhuman. First of all, what did I do? There were some boys who managed to get extra food because they didn't go out to work. They became they worked in the camp. They worked either in the kitchen or they worked in the block. They were Stubendiensten. A Stubendienst is they did the room service, sort of room service. So they had extra food. There were two or three boys who were fattened up by the chief of the Kapos, who was a pederast, a homosexual. And he used them. And so he used to give them extra food. And they looked reasonably well, but we all lived together. And from time to time, I used to challenge these boys to a wrestle. And I used to say to myself, now, they are not as hungry as I am. They look better than I do. Now, let me see who is the stronger one. And I used to put them down as quickly as I always used to put down any of my contemporaries and some older ones. So in this respect, nothing has changed. And most of them were really older than I. And they were heavier than I. And yet I could move faster and I still retained strength and willpower. And that gave me, every time I used to wrestle, they couldn't believe, they accepted my challenge with alacrity because they looked at me and they thought, well, listen, they laughed. So every time I challenged them, they wanted to beat because this time I'm weaker and I'm not going to do it. But I did it every time and I did it as quickly as I did in the first time, in the first place.
Were there any homosexual assaults made? Or did these boys?
Well, I think they simply submitted because, I mean, they were, I don't know how it all happened, but people were prepared to do anything for food.
Were any homosexual advances made to you?
No. The only one occasion that happened to me where I was very frightened was when he used to come into to our block, to our room, every Sunday morning. He used to sit down, he used to jog.
The kappa.
And one day, I don't know what I did, but he suddenly sort of looked at me and he says, "Why are you looking at me with such angry eyes?" So I looked at him and I really got frightened. I said, I don't know. I didn't mean anything by it. I didn't look at you with angry eyes. He says, "Well, you looked like you were doing it." I said, "Well, I'm sorry, but I really was not aware of it, and I'm not angry. I've got no reason to be angry. You're very nice to us, you know." No. So he sort of made the joke, and that was it. Now, if you were to ask me, what would I have done if he would have taken me and if he would have tried to play with me? Well, I really can't. I can answer you with all honesty. I would not say to you, I would have resisted it. I wouldn't have resisted it. I just couldn't tell you. Because I don't think anybody should ever make any pronouncement until one is put in that situation. Because I think there comes a time when the willingness to survive, to live, is so strong that one is prepared to do almost anything. And women especially, who were, and I've seen it, I've witnessed it, who were left completely on their own when their husbands were taken away from them and their children were taken away from them. And one would have thought that they were so desolate and that they would kill themselves. But instead, within a month, even less than that, they found a sugar daddy, or a sugar daddy found them, somebody who had food, somebody who could protect them. And they didn't do it because they loved the man, they didn't do it because they suddenly lost their love for their husbands or for their children. They did it because they were helpless and that they didn't even know what they were doing. They needed somebody to protect them. And if there was somebody who simply had a better position in the camp and who could come along and give them that extra food and take care of them, they were prepared to live with them. This is when it was possible to do it. There were times when it was impossible to do it. But when it was possible, these things did happen, and they happened quite more often than one realized.
Were the inmates in any way condemning of the boys who'd submitted to the homosexual advances of the kappas, or to women who...
Well, we knew about it. We knew that these boys were... the kappa was taking them out. We simply accepted it. We did not ostracize them. On the contrary, we had no strength to ostracize them. We had no will. We had nothing to... We couldn't do anything. We couldn't... In any case, we didn't understand it. I mean, this was the first time that I came across that kind of situation. At that moment, I may have heard something about it, but I just didn't know anything about it. And even when I was told about it, I still am sure that I didn't understand it. I really didn't know what it meant, what he was doing. So I was completely ignorant of the whole thing, in spite of the fact that we were talking. I think so was every other boy.
Was this a mixed camp? Was it men
and women? No, just was only men. Only men. Well, so I was fortified all the time by this kind of situation also.